I would love to start with getting to work with John again. This must be so different, though, looking at Irresistible compared to Rosewater. I mean, location-wise alone, I'd love to start there. I mean, this movie is so different than the small, claustrophobic feel we get in Rosewater. Can you tell me a bit about getting to shoot? I think you guys shot out of Georgia to capture the Midwest feel, but what was it like shooting there in Georgia, but also just for Irresistible as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, shooting in Georgia is wonderful. They're really well supplied with fantastic crews. There's no shortage of really talented crews in out of Atlanta. So it was the first time I had worked there. I was expecting that it would be coming soon because of the incentives that the state has for filming. So I knew it was coming. That seems to always change. That's, you know, was in Canada, then it was in New Mexico, and then Louisiana, and so I find myself jumping around, and as a result of that, having to find local crews all the time, because normally on the budgets that I'm working at, medium-sized budgets, it's prohibitive for production to, you know, be able for me to bring people from California, from New York, where my most steady crews are. So, we were, you know, we had the directive of shooting Georgia for Wisconsin, and not so much of a challenge, frankly, because we wound up shooting in the countryside. You know, it's not an urban story; it's a story that takes place in a small farm town in Wisconsin. So, I think the production designer probably had the bigger challenge, because she was looking for architecture that was, you know, more applicable to the north of our country than the south of our country. So my dream when I read the script was, you know, I hope we could find a small town and own the streets and some buildings and just treat it like a back lot. And I knew that was a tall order, but as we started looking, we actually found a small town up northwest of Atlanta, about an hour, called Rockmart. And the thing that's happening to all small towns across America is that the old original Main Street is kind of forgotten, and they've built the main commerce along the small roads that go along the interstate or something like that, so that, you know, you pull off the interstate exit and there you have a strip of strip malls that run parallel to the highway for a good, you know, mile or two. So it meant that all the commerce was moved out of downtown, the original downtown, and it was a very sleepy little place where that was a typical old-style Main Street USA. And my dream came true. We were able to occupy like two or three square blocks of this town, probably built in the 30s. And it was of German origin, which was really interesting, because it's a lot of what happened in the town that we were modeling it on in Wisconsin. So some of the architectural elements were right. So that was really an advantage to us. You know, we were able to occupy some storefronts, and the storefronts that weren't, you know, pertinent to the story. Grace Young is the production designer, great, resourceful, wonderful artist. She was able to board up some of the stores because it's a town that's down on its luck anyway, and part of the trajectory of the story is that this town is closed down. And as these political machines come into town, they infuse the town with commerce. The coffee shop opens, the bakery, you know, the bars, people are out, and the town is getting a shot of adrenaline. So that was good, because then the other main location was the farm, and the farm was literally 2 miles from the town, the small village that we occupied. So it was really, really nice. Big old fields, you know, open farm fields. And pretty generic that way, you know, rolling hills and deciduous trees.
So I've got to ask, Bobby, you've gotten to work with so many directors multiple times. I mean, especially like Oren Moverman. Can you talk about getting to go to that second project, like with John now that you have a familiarity with the director, how does your approach change, or is it very similar to, you know, the way you guys tackled Rosewater, or was this completely different?
No, I think each project, I mean, I'm of the mind that that I like to start each project with tabula rasa, you know, completely open, clear, artistic, creative vision of a new project, because each one asks, is very discreet and asks for what it asks for. So I'm not one to apply what I've done on a film to another film. I like the film to be able to tell me and ask of me what is the right way to approach it. So across the board, that's how I work. And with John, you know, the first project that we did, it was funny because when John hired me on that film originally after my first interview with him, he called me and he said, well, how would you like to go to Jordan in the summer during Ramadan when it's going to be 110 degrees with a director that doesn't know what they're doing? And I was like, okay, yeah, if that director is you, I certainly say yes to that. So that long way of saying he was very open about his what he, you know, his shortcomings as a film director, because granted it was his first time. So he was very open to learning. He's a good storyteller, John. He's a very smart guy. So what I was saying to him was that mostly what I need from you is the meaning, you know, what we're trying to get out of this story. And scene for scene, not only what are the narrative components of the scene, but what are the mood, and what is the mood and ambience of the scene? What does the scene feel like, you know? Because at least if we start there, then I can apply the proper tools that will bolster that intention narratively or even ambiently, what a scene feels like. You know, we were inside a prison for most of Rosewater, so that was very different from being out at farmland and, you know, Main Street, USA. It was really beautiful to see John not only during Rosewater evolve as an assured director, but coming to Irresistible, it was really nice to see that everything that he had taken from Rosewater, he was definitely applying to Irresistible. That it was very evident to me that those lessons had really stuck, and he was well on his way as a really good director.
You know, Bobby, you've always been innovative in the digital sphere. You were one of the first people to work with the Arri Alexa. I think you're one of the first people to dive into 4K on Gypsy. Can you talk about the technical camera stuff you used on Irresistible and what memorable moments or difficulties maybe you had or obstacles you had to overcome, or what was your camera message from this film?
Yeah, I mean, camera-wise, we stuck digitally and we were shooting with the Alexa. It's a favorite camera of mine. I, from the very beginning, as you mentioned, when we shot Rampart with Oren, it was literally the first film ever shot S-by-S, ProRes on that camera. So we were kind of forging a new frontier in terms of the workflow of that camera. And I just became really familiar with how that camera functioned and the results of what you get off of that beautiful sensor. So digital was the right way to go with John's. And with his film, we had two very distinct worlds. We had this small town that was being invaded by people, you know, city folk. And very much John's said that, you know, the town was the town before the quote-unquote virus took over. And so there was this transition from a very sleepy town to a very populated, jumping kind of town. We wanted to make a distinction between the feeling of what the city people brought and what the country people had. And so my first thought was that whenever we were presenting the town as it's from the townspeople point of view, that the rendering of that part of the film would be warmer, softer, just had a nice tactile, smooth, human feel, and that when the city folk arrive, they bring kind of a crispness and a coldness. The surfaces became, you know, more rectilinear. There was less soft edges. So in design, that was definitely one of the conceits. Everything that felt soft and cozy became very rigid and sharp. So part of my process was using different lenses to represent these two worlds. And for the town world, we were using old Cook Pancro Speed Pancro lenses. They're lenses built in the 70s, have a very soft rendering because of the imperfect qualities of the glass. And then for the city part and for the invasion, we started using Zeiss Master Primes that are probably one of the sharpest and more contrasty lenses that are made out there. So, the rendering, just from the point of view of what the lens was capturing, was quite different. And then lighting also was cooler. We started, introducing a cooler palette as the city invaded the warm country.
One of the elements... Sorry about that, Bobby.
No, that was the overall kind of, the biggest design conceit. Also density. The other thing is that this, before they arrive, it's very open, and there's just less people in the frame. And I was using a very shallow depth of field to represent the country so that there was a softer, the background went out of focus and it was more poetic. And then when the city folk invaded, I was using a greater depth of field so that the frame became more frenetic and frantic, and you weren't able, there was mid-ground, foreground, and background that was all in focus, as opposed to, so your eye was very restless in capturing what was being presented, as opposed to in the current country, the focus would only be in the foreground because of the limited depth of field, and then they would be surrounded by this general softness around them, So that became another element that we used.
I'm curious. One of my favorite scenes in the film, I think it's one that's used in the trailer, is where Steve's character is trying to film basically a spot that's going to be used later on, and there's cows in the background, and it's in the open in the country. Can you talk about getting to shoot in the open air like that compared to other scenes where you're indoors? How much freedom you have shooting on the outside with the cameras that you were using, and that 70s look, how crisp did it look on the outside for you?
Yeah, I mean, we were using, first of all, your best friend, one's best friend on a film, one of them is the first assistant director, because the only recourse you have in exteriors that are so wide is the sun, where it is in the sky. So, we plan those scenes so that they take place when the sun is, for the hours that the sun is in the portion of the sky where we want the light to be. Normally that's first thing in the morning or last part of the day. We start shooting that scene very early. In the morning, it was funny with that scene because John had seen this pastoral kind of scene of cows grazing in the background of the scene. But what had happened is that we had wranglers, but every time the wranglers put the cows in the frame exactly where we wanted them, they would move out of the frame very quickly. So John incorporated the wranglers into the scene as part of the story, and as you see in the trailer, he says, "No, not so many black ones there." He said, "Well, they're not going to stay there unless the wranglers are there." So he just had the wranglers be part of what he brought to the country again, bringing in an artificial construct of his idea of an ad campaign to what would just be natural. Cows naturally grazing wherever they wanted to in the field. So that was a funny scene.
This is going to be a bit of a broad question, but Bobby, in researching your career, I love the fact that before you even got to NYU, you've relayed this story a few times about going and shooting the Tibetan monks. And we've had monks come to Dallas, and I know how impactful they were on our lives. Can you talk about those early travels you had in your 20s and how they have helped you become the great cinematographer you are? I mean, your visual eye, I think, is very important to the filmmakers who want you.
Thank you. My trajectory was very strange. I started off in academia. I was really thinking until I was in my young 20s to practice medicine. And when I realized at the point where I graduated undergraduate with a biochemistry degree that it was something that just wasn't speaking to my soul, and at that point I was really lost because I had no idea what I would be doing. But the one thing I did know inside of me is that I was really hungering. I grew up in New York City to get out and just see nature and see the world and the expanse of what was out there. And so I took the money that I saved for going to medical school, and I just decided, okay, let me get as far away as I can from New York City. And so I went to the Far East, and started traveling around China and China into Russia, down into Europe, and then I stayed Paris for a good while. And as I was there, because I always loved Paris, I always had a romantic draw to me, particularly visually, architecturally. And I stayed there for almost a year, and I became acquainted with a still photographer, a fashion photographer, where I started learning more about camera work. And he was a photographer who was using movement a lot, like dancers and stuff in his photographs. So I was, at one point, he got a video camera, one of the first Sony 3-2 black and white little portable cameras that weren't very little or very portable. And I started shooting the sessions. And so it was my first kind of introduction to shooting moving images. And I just became really enamored of it. And at that point, someone that he knew, an acquaintance of his, was going to India to film this pilgrimage that the Dalai Lama was taking with the entourage of Tibetan Buddhists to all the secret Buddhist sites along the Ganges River, and wanted to know if I wanted to come and just kind of document the trip. And so I did, with a still camera and with a video camera, and I just became really so enthralled with the possibility of using a camera, and that it really formed my my eye. It really developed not only my eye, but a desire to what a future could be behind the camera. And I went back to New York, where I hadn't been for 2 years, and living with my best friend, and she was a film editor, and she looked over my stuff and she said, "Have you ever considered you know, thinking about cinematography as a career, and at that point the light kind of went on, and with the materials that I had, I put a resume and a presentation together and applied to the graduate school and was accepted with scholarship. I think the thing about graduate school is they're always looking for people who are experienced and have some worldliness about them, so I think I was bringing an asset to that school, as well as, you know, getting to learn my craft. Great thing about school is that you fall on your face as hard as you can, as many times as you can, and it saves, you know, I think the mistakes and mishaps are really important to incur early in your career, because, you know, it's a very disappointing, you know.
Well, Bobby, I know I'm cutting close on time, so I just was going to throw out some names that you've worked with, if you don't mind just giving what comes to mind. I'll start with something that's personal for me. I'm a huge Pearl Jam fan, so I've got to ask, what was it like working with Mark on the video theory stuff for Yield, if you have any memories from that?
So beautiful. We shot 16mm, mostly handheld camera. I had shot two films with Mark, so I was very familiar with his style. And Cameron Crowe was producing that, you know, big music guy in the Seattle scene. So everybody was really friendly and to us. The band felt really open to us. And it was basically fly on the wall kind of filming, you know. We were invited into their studios. They were recording and you know, building up Yield, the record, and it was intimate and wonderful and fascinating.
We kind of mentioned it earlier when I asked about the Aria and getting to work with like 4K on Gypsy, but I'm curious, looking at advances of digital film, is there anything that you're excited that's coming around the corner, or something you're getting to work with, or you know, do you just look at what you get to work with on each project?
Yeah, I mean, the project tells you what is, you know, how you, what are the tools that you'll be using. To me, I'm a strict believer of listening to the story and using the proper tools to apply to that story. The main thing I love about being introduced to the digital realm was that, unlike film, where the process of setting up was quite arduous, because especially early in my early days in film in the 80s, the film stocks were very slow, and which meant that we needed a lot of light to capture images, and it meant that, you know, 50 or 60% or more, I would say, was taken up in production by just setting up shots as opposed to shooting shots. And with the digital advent, it started, setup time was less. The instruments of lighting became light, physically weight-wise lighter, so there wasn't so much support and grip work needed for the lights. And setup time became much less. Now we could use practical lights. You know, you can work with a production designer to design the light just from practicals on a set. So what I'm trying to say is that the digital advent has given much more time to the actors and the director to be rolling the camera, as opposed to the crew setting up for rolling of the camera. So I think that's really great, because narratively it just gives you the ability to expand and to, while you're in a scene, find the scene and not have the onus so much on, you know, we have to go, because we have so little time. So I think it's really advanced the creativity of storytelling, I must say, and the time that it gives for the process for actors and director.
And lastly, since this will be put out mainly to a Dallas audience, but it'll be online, I would love to know if you could share, like you were prior to us recording, any Dallas or just Texas-centric stories you may have.
Yeah, I mean, I shot with Mark Pellington in a film called Arlington Road, which we shot in Houston, and my crew at that point was divided between people from Dallas and people from Houston, and they always were arguing back and forth which were the better town. I was always in the middle on that, because I was from New York, and I was like, well, as far as I'm concerned, neither of them are the better town. New York is the better town. But Houston was great because of, you know, the of the art there, the Manil Foundation is a great place, and the Rocco Chapel. I was living in that neighborhood really close to the chapel, so you know, I always like to check out the local museums. So Dallas had a real draw to me because I had always wanted to see the Kimball Art Center, at which, you know, it's such a beautiful building in the way that it's appointed to light. You know, I think the building is built for how light is presented into those galleries, that beautiful soft light that is being reflected into those spaces. So the Kimball always holds a real, you know, dear place in my heart. Inspirational to see art in such a beautiful space with such consideration for how the art is presented from the point of view of lighting, you know.
So. Very nice. And definitely Dallas is better than Houston, Bobby.
Well, I always wondered, like I always, when anytime I go to a place, I always try to investigate, why the hell is this place even here? Like, what made a human being stand at this spot and say, a great city is coming? And then, you know, with Houston, I found out that it was, you know, the city was to the south at first on the water, and then the hurricane destroyed that, the central, and it moved up to Houston. And then with Dallas, I found out that it was a very, you know, important place on from commerce of cattle. So it's really hard. So it's always nice to get the history of, like, you know, what went through this place to build to the place that it is now. I guess cattle and railroad went through Dallas.
Definitely. Last question, Bobby. I would love to know, I mean, right now it's tough times for so many people, but I'm curious, is there anything you're being able to work on or projects that you're excited to be tackling in the future? I mean, I know according to IMDb, you're getting to work with Amy Redford again. The guitar movie was so beautiful. Can you talk about anything that's coming up for you that you can share?
Well, here in Portland, I've been able locally to, the past couple of weeks, to shoot some music videos for a local band called Portugal, The Man. And that was a really nice thing, just to get back on the set with a very limited crew, of course. And they were shot, both of those things were shot as exteriors. So it was quite easier to manage that with taking, you know, into consideration COVID. Scripts are just starting to dribble in now. I feel like just in the past couple of weeks, agents are sending scripts. Oren have had a documentary planned for with Willie Nelson, which a large part of it we were going to shoot in the environs of Austin, you know, which I was really, really looking forward to and still am looking forward to. So we're thinking that could probably be the first thing that comes up, because on a documentary, the crew can be more run and gun and much smaller. And Oren is just starting to say, you know, well, maybe there's a way that we can get out there and start with a, you know, bare bones crew getting this, because I guess Willie Nelson has a small western town that he built for a film in the 70s that is his playground, and we were going to use that as the backdrop to tell the story and interview people. So Austin is, you know, of course, the hill country, and Texas is beautiful, so it would be nice to be there.
Wow, that's so cool. And Oren's one of my favorites. As an Israeli-American, I'm forced to love him. So,
and I don't think it's hard to love him because he's a true artist.
Yeah.
So, it's amazing.
Bobby, thank you so much for the time. It was a real pleasure. Can't wait to see future projects, especially this Willie Nelson one. It sounds awesome. And, yeah, I hope you do get to come back to Texas and film it. And thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you so much. So nice to meet you.
Bye, guys.